Trofinco's Valor Program for veteran entrepreneurs is especially tailored to support veterans in transitioning to business ownership with dedicated financial solutions and resources. For traveling entrepreneurs, the program offers flexibility and support in funding, critical for those exploring new markets. Business owners will find the personalized approach and understanding of veteran needs invaluable for expanding operations or starting new ventures. Empower your entrepreneurial journey with the Valor Program and turn your business vision into reality. New U-Life Somaderm Gel. Travelers and business owners can benefit from enhanced energy levels and improved sleep quality. Crucial for adjusting to new time zones and maintaining peak performance during business operations. Entrepreneurs will appreciate the potential anti-aging effects, supporting a dynamic, youthful appearance vital for first impressions. Click here now to revitalize your body's natural rhythms and present your best self in every meeting and adventure.
Welcome to the Sales Platoon Podcast, where strategy meets storytelling, right at the crossroads of the battlefield and the business front. We'll bring you tactics, triumphs, and truths from the trenches of sales. Here's your host, John Rankin.
Hey, everybody. Excited to be with you today. And our guest, Chuck Meisel, who is actually a Green Beret that's been in sales for 31 years in the healthcare industry. I'm so excited because it's not often that I get to interview former Green Berets, and it's even less often that they pick the path of sales. So it's going to be a great day with you. I'm excited about it. Tell us a little bit about yourself. I mean, I know that you're a Green Beret, but tell us about how you came in and then made that transition.
Thanks, John. Thanks for having me first. It's been a long journey and one with a lot of different directions taken. You know, for me, my dad was a Green Beret in first group during Vietnam. I had an ROTC scholarship that I needed to get. After he passed away my freshman year of college. And it was always my goal to be an infantry officer, an Army Ranger, and then go into SF. And so that was kind of the blueprint. I mean, all of us have dreams and aspirations, but I kind of knew what I wanted to do. And whether it's, you know, kind of sales in terms of being the best, or being really, really good and taking on the challenges that you have to face and overcome to achieve those goals.
I want to pause there because you know, we actually don't see this very often for your dad to be in SF before it was SF, right?
Right.
Because we didn't call it Green Berets until right after Vietnam. Talk to me about what that looked like growing up with I don't want to say a real Green Beret, but you know what I'm saying, because it was different during Vietnam with the snake eaters. So what was that like, and how did that, what was it about what you saw out of your dad from that period that caused you to want to go to SF?
I mean, I was born in Okinawa because he was in first group. I didn't grow up in a career military family because my dad, and maybe this is became the person I became, he got into sales. After he got out, he was in the insurance business. And so it wasn't when you're younger, you're busy doing your own stuff, growing up, being a teenager, et cetera. So there, I mean, it wasn't like he was my mentor and he guided me, but I saw enough. And I knew the challenges that, and I wanted to do something different. I wanted to serve, you know, as I progressed in my military career, it was like kind of how I've lived my life. Hey, from a sales perspective, what's my goal this quarter? What's my goal this year? And for me, from in medical sales for the past 31 years, it's like, what do I need to do to get to the next step? And sometimes, for example, today, all I do is sell. I do lead, I do manage some, but I'm a sales guy, right? That's it. Every sales leader should see themselves as a salesperson. You're carrying a bag. you're engaging with people on a daily basis. But going back to your question, it wasn't like, hey, I want my dad, because he was a Green Beret, that's what I wanted to do. But maybe subconsciously, that's kind of what pushed me in that direction. I enjoyed being out. I enjoyed the physical aspects of being an infantry officer and a Green Beret and, you know, sucking it up.
Well, and you served from 84 to 93. So you served at literally everybody that was probably your mentor in the military or leader in the military was most likely a Vietnam veteran at that point.
Yeah. I mean, my first team sergeant, most of the senior officers and senior enlisted had been in Vietnam. And so you had those role models to follow.
Yeah. And it was a very different culture back then, right? We talk about it today because we have 18 x-rays, right? But there back then, almost everybody was an 18 x-ray. You know, like there were people coming straight out of high school and going straight into the pipeline for special forces.
Right. And it evolved because, you know, I mean, x-rays still go to selection. The only way you went to selection when I was in was you had to be an E5 or above. And so that we didn't have the x-rays.
Yeah.
So all the guys that I went through the Q course with and served with the exception of the senior enlisted guys had come through that, had been in other units. So they had followed the path of going, hey, I was an infantry squad leader. I was an armor to where they wanted to go SF. So everybody follows a different route.
Yeah. So in the 80s and 90s, because I got out in 96, so you were just, I didn't serve as long as you did, but you were just a couple of years ahead of me. There was no transition for me. What was it like for you? I mean, they just handed me my DD-214 and said, don't let the door hit you in the ass.
More or less the same. But, you know, and when we all think back to, hey, when we serve, hey, the Army is going to be really screwed up when I leave or you leave. It's a big machine. It keeps going. And you know, I'm sure people remember me back in the team room and at the battalion, et cetera. But it keeps going on. I mean, that's life. Whether it's me, if I were to leave the company that I'm at, people would remember me. Our customers would go, hey, what happened to Chuck? But it would keep going. And what the one thing is we're all going to be replaced at some point. And, you know, you can't look at it as like you are the single element that keeps that company going. And and I've had, you know, I've worked for six different companies since I got out over 31 years. I've been at my current company, Surgical Notes, for 10 years, and it's been a great run. But when you look back at your career, I think it's vitally important. And from a transition perspective, I'm going to go back to that. For the young men and women that are listening that will see this, the one thing that they have going for them that nobody in the civilian sector has is understanding regimen, work ethic, a training schedule. And you think back to when you served, you knew what you were doing. You'd seen the training schedule. You knew where you were, what tasks had to be accomplished. And that is what you bring to a private sector, because you're disciplined, you understand how to get things done, and you work hard. You outwork everybody. And and if you continue to do that, and from a sales perspective, you know, I think back to one of the guys who's, I said, talked to one of my direct reports, and I go, what, you know, it was a Friday. I go, what are you doing? And he's like, expense reports. I go, that's what you do on weekends. All right. That's when you get that done, because this is your selling time.
Yeah.
If your customers are available, you're reaching out to them. And again, I'm kind of old school in the fact that when I got into sales, didn't have a laptop, didn't have a cell phone. Right? So it was about getting in front of people and kind of you reaching out to me. This is getting in front. This is the new getting in front of people, but it's not about, hey, I generated 300 outbound emails this week. That's not targeted.
Yeah, it's not targeted. And I mean, it's such a low percentage anyway, right?
It might
help you a little bit, but I can't even tell you the last time I bought anything off an email.
No. It's when I look at when I started and from my first job, I was very fortunate because I went to a company and we were selling medical devices and products. All right. So you had to learn it. And again, the young men and women that are on this call, they're competitive. No one likes to lose. All right. So again, being, you know, up first, staying up late and studying, learning what it is that you're selling, so you become a subject matter expert. Again, in SF, if you're an 18 Echo, you know, you're the engineer. You're the demolitions guy. He's our subject matter expert. He has to know everything about that. Same thing, you know. So when I look back at, hey, where I started and to where I am today, having sold devices, equipment, services, my success has been because I want to get to know John.
Yeah.
And it can be little things tied to, hey, tell me about your business, because every business is a little bit different. They're not all McDonald's. All right. My customers, and this is a phrase I use, if you've been to one surgery center, you've been to one surgery center. They're all a little different.
Yeah.
All right. They all have the same mission. They all essentially do the same thing. The end result's the same. But the individuals that are the leaders at that facility, the key physicians, that they're all a little unique and they're different, and their pain points, what they're trying to accomplish, may be different at different times. So, you know, it's been an absolutely fun ride, and I've learned a lot at every job, and probably, you know, everyone's going to encounter failure. And the failure can be not winning a deal, or it could be, hey, that job absolutely sucked for a lot of different reasons and we went different directions. And we've all had those, but every position, every role gives you an opportunity to learn a little bit more.
Yeah. Now, when you started to get to the 8-year mark, 9-year mark, I mean, did you think you were going to be a career guy, or did you know that you weren't going to be a career guy and then you just made the decision to transition? How did that play out for you?
So I was at the 8-year mark. I kind of did not want to be a major in SF. Because you're not the action guy. So the majors, I mean, they were all good. Don't get me wrong. And friends of mine that stayed in and did amazing things as senior officers and battalion and group commanders. That's awesome. But for me, it was like, all right. Do I go? I went to selection and I didn't get picked. So that if I'd gotten that, I would have stayed, but I didn't. So then it was like, all right. What else do I want to do? And, you know, reached out.
Well, would have been what, 87, 88?
No, that would have been like 92. No, I got 92. Out 93. Yeah.
Okay. And, so I don't remember. And and we don't have to dig deep. Was that Delta selection that you went to and didn't get selected? Okay, because there's now, I don't remember in the 90s, but now there's like three or four different selections. So I wanted to see which selection you were talking about.
And so at that point, and my wife and I, we didn't have kids. And it was like, all right, what do you want to do? And I reached out to people that I knew and reached out. And this is the key part is maintaining relationships.
Yeah.
With those that got out before you and or others that you've stayed in touch with and people you might have gone to school with, et cetera. So I had others that I reached out to. And one of the guys was a guy that I had grown up with, and he had followed me into the Army. His stint wasn't as good, but he'd gotten a job with a medical device company out in California.
Okay.
And so that company hired a lot of military. And so my training class was me, an Air Force guy, and another Army guy. And so all three of us had very, very, very similar mentalities in terms of how we worked, but we were sponges. Hey, teach, I don't know this. And and the three of us stayed friends for life. So from our initial training class, kind of like, I mean, for everyone on this call, and this is the important part, you're going to make friendships and relationships with individuals in every unit. And today it's so much easier to stay in touch with those individuals, whether they be a squad leader, platoon sergeant, et cetera, or the guys that were in your squad, and staying in touch with them and developing that and maintaining that contact, not just because you want to remain friends, but hey, what are you doing? What do you like about it? And that plays into, you know, building that network, because everything we do in our lives is about connections and relationships. And you know, it's a Malcolm Gladwell book, you know, talk to people, talk to strangers. So I'll bore you last night. I'm in San Francisco for an orthopedic conference right now. Younger guy to my right. I go, so who do you work for? And he said, Stryker. Stryker's a great medical device company. And I go, oh, really? Well, you know, what's your background? What were you doing before that? Because they recruit a lot of athletes. And he goes, I was in the Army. And what'd you do? Where were you? Fort Knox, all right? Tanker. So, you know, here's this young guy. And then I'm going to bore you again, because I'm talking to this orthopedic surgeon yesterday. He's orthopedic surgeon towards the end of his career, and he's from Massachusetts. And I said something about, yeah, I used to live out in Ayr. Do you know where that is? He goes, yeah, Fort Devens. He goes, I was stationed there. I go, really? And he was in 10th group. He was there four years before I was. His transition was military intelligence to going to med school and becoming an orthopedic surgeon. So we just started talking about Fort Devens, the group commander that he knew, that I knew. And, you know, it was just a
small world.
It's an incredibly small world. It is hard for those folks that are listening, maintaining, being that connector is so vital. I mean, it's staying in touch and knowing that this person's over here and are getting connected on LinkedIn. You have so many more tools, and it's easier. But the key thing is it's not just the text. It's, hey, it's get on the phone, FaceTime. What are you doing? And get a little bit deeper, because in a relationship tied to understanding what pressure someone's dealing with, our customers are dealing with the same thing. So, you know, how are things going here? That person that you're talking to, that potential customer, they're going to go somewhere else. And and hopefully you've developed a strong enough relationship that when they go to that next company, they're contacting you. So it's constant, and that's what I've been able. That's one of the things I've been very, very successful with.
You know, it's that old cliche, right? Your net worth is directly tied to your network, right? And this is something that at least the Army does well. I don't know about the other branches, but they're really trying to force feed these kids to get onto LinkedIn and to start to build out their network. And when you get into business, I tell people, you know, there's not a state that I can go to that I can't find somewhere to crash. Like there is somebody from my 20 years at Fifth Group or my 3 years in the Army or my time in business that I can call and go, hey, I'm swinging through. Do you mind if I crash at your place? When you can do that, it becomes really a lot easier. It's difficult anyway, but it becomes more easy to actually have a professional career in sales and business because you'll have a wide network of people to pull on. Like a guy, Chuck, who do you know that does ... whatever. I mean,
it's not a light switch where you turn it on and off. It's gradual and it's constant. And it's hard. And friends of mine that I went to school with, they're like, Chuck, you're the glue. You're the guy that keeps us all together. And that's not bragging. And it is. I mean, you do lose touch with some people. And that's okay. You can't stay in touch with a million people. But that's right. But part of it is, you know, when they see you again at a conference, or you're in a different city or state and you reach out to them and you go, hey, man, let's go grab a beer. Let's catch up. It's been 10 years. We're going to be receptive. And, you know, that's what's been the linchpin for the success that I've had. In my market, when I go to a conference, I am the ASC guy. Everybody knows me. And so, but what I've been in is I've been in a vertical. All right. So I've been in healthcare, and whether you're selling construction, cars, any product or service, what's really important is you have an opportunity to make a lot of changes early, but as we age, you've got to identify, in my opinion, that sector that you feel most comfortable in and not jump from job to job, but because that all those relationships, it would take me a long, long time if I were to leave medical and go to a different industry.
Sure.
Because all my relationships are in this sector.
Yeah.
Everybody I know, every story I know is here. And, you know, what I would encourage folks to do is if you're starting your sales career, you've had a couple jobs, you've learned some things. Medical is awesome. I'm sure if you were talking to other people, that, you know, gas and oil, industrial, et cetera, software, I mean, this is my space.
Root Brands Wellness's Zero In offers a competitive edge over other nootropics like Joe Rogan's Alpha Brain by focusing on natural gut health axis optimization, providing clearer cognitive function and sustained attention without artificial stimulants. Travelers will benefit from enhanced mental clarity during long journeys, while entrepreneurs and business owners can leverage improved focus for strategic planning and execution. Elevate your mental game beyond conventional limits and outperform your competition with Zero In today.
Well, I really like that. I think so. There's a couple of different things here, right? So first of all, currently, as people are transitioning out of the military, the average is within their first 3 or 4 years, they have switched jobs almost every single year. Some of that has to do with the length of time that we've been in. So, right. You know, 20-year career.
Right.
And now you're going, and I say this loosely, but you'll get it as a sales guy. You go from a completely socialist society where everything down to what you're going to eat and what time you're going to eat and what you're going to wear, to a completely capitalistic society, which is, hey, Chuck, you don't freaking show up. That's on you. You just won't make no money this month.
Right.
You know? So you go from very micromanaged and that approach to freedom. And that idea of niching down and figuring out who it is that you want to be is so important when you're handed all that freedom back. I mean, it's crazy. And so there is a lot of switching. And
John, I agree. The having that training schedule and continuing that. So, you know, even when you're looking at, hey, we block out time on your calendar, this 2 hours, got my list of who I'm contacting, but you have to be regimented about it, because we've both seen individuals that got out and then they're like, man, I got all this time to be on the couch. Well, being on the couch, unless you're a TikTok or something, doesn't pay any bills. And so you've got to hustle. And the only thing you control is your time.
Yep.
And is it productive? Do you have the list of individuals that you're following up with that day? If you're like me and you travel every week, all right, are you thinking ahead? Hey, here's my schedule for the next 2 weeks. All right, where am I going to be? Who am I going to reach out to now? Because I want to have my base appointments lined up weeks in advance. So when I'm in Los Angeles or I'm in San Francisco or Phoenix, et cetera, I've got the key things, and then I'm going to fill in around it to see other people that may not have been responsive. And not everyone wants to see it.
Yeah.
We may think that everyone wants to see us, but people are busy and you have to understand that. And it may not fit with their time calendar.
You know, so I do sales coaching. So I work with companies across the nation, as well as doing the sales as a skill bridge for people getting out. And what you just said there was so important, because I don't think people realize the top three problems I hear from companies when it comes to selling more effectively and making more money. Number one is time management. I hear that it edges it out, but probably just a tad bit more than lead gen, right? So, and then you said about having that regimented and disciplined schedule. So every top producer I know, whether it's in sales or athletics or just being a business owner, has a very regimented calendar. Talk to me about that for just a minute. What does your regiment look like? I mean, you're traveling, so that regimen has to be flexible, but you still have to have that structure to be as successful as you've been. So talk us through that. What's that look like?
I mean, the most successful individuals are still getting up at O dark 30. All right. And whether you're working out early or you're working out late, you've got to factor in some PT and it's a young person's game, and you've got to be light on your feet. But going back to what that schedule looks like, I'm in my office when I'm not traveling every morning at 8 a.m. All right. I've already been up. I've already gone to the dog park. I'm going to work out at night. But, you know, tied to looking at my calendar, I start on Sunday. Number one, I'm updating Salesforce and the opportunities that I'm working on. Hey, is the close date accurate? Am I moving leads to opportunities? And everybody has a CRM, but that's my Sunday evening ritual, all right? And then I'm thinking about, hey, where am I going to be? Who else do I want to see while I'm in town? So if I'm in LA, like, where am I next week? Next week, I'm back in Colorado, so I'm home for a week, all right? But I do have appointments with prospects and opportunities in Colorado next week. Those are already in the calendar. So I'm filling in that time, but I'm still carving out and blocking out time in my calendar tied to prospecting. And I'll identify the prospecting based on where I'm going to be so I can fill up around those key appointments. And again, guys, it's not about, hey, I've got to see 20 people a day. Theoretically, particularly if you're driving around in LA, you can't get anywhere to see 20 people a day.
Especially LA.
Yeah. It's just not going to happen.
Right.
But, you know, so it's, hey, here are my key objectives. Here are my key meetings and fill in around that. Because maybe that cold call turns into a 30, 45 minute conversation and they want to learn more because you caught that individual at the right time.
Yeah.
And if you're next door to a key customer and it's a prospect down the street and you're not going in and at least confirming, hey, who's there, who the key decision makers, or for a lot of salespeople, when they're new, they're the FNG for a year, 2 years. And being that new guy, you know, gives you the reason to kind of just drop in. Hey, I'm new to the organization. And you have to do that. We've all done that. Now I'm the old guy, not the new guy.
Yeah, right. So I get this a lot because medical sales is a very lucrative profession. You can really make most people I talk to their first year out, as long as they're an average salesperson or at least doing an average work, make them somewhere between 60 and 75,000. Was that what you've kind of traditionally seen? And then by the end of the second year, they're making well over six figures. So we get a lot of questions about medical sales, pharmaceutical sales, the travel component of it. If somebody's listening today and they're considering medical, what would you tell them?
You know, when you look at medical, the mission in medical is to heal. So you're in a market that is noble, all right? My customers, no one goes into a surgery center with not knowing what's going to happen. They're going there to get fixed. And the surgeon, regardless if it's a hernia, a torn meniscus, rotator cuff, they're going to, when they leave there, their body will be fixed. Then they've got to go through rehab and stuff. But going back to medical, there's so many areas within medical. You've got physician office, you've got surgery centers, you've got hospitals, you've got urgent care, you've got subspecialties tied to radiology and imaging, PT. And it was fascinating because at this orthopedic conference, there's like 5,000 exhibitors. And I mean massive companies.
Yeah.
I mean, with two-story booths and 75 reps, like the Stryker and the Arthrex guys, everybody there is there because there's orthopedic surgeons there. And that's the fascinating part. So for every one physician, they create 20 jobs. That includes their staff at their practice, et cetera. But when you look back at all the different device companies and it's kind of astounding to think that there's 5,000 companies exhibiting, and every one of those companies brings in anywhere from 5 to 75 reps, salespeople. That's a lot of horsepower. But everybody's vying for the attention of the orthopedic surgeon. We're a small company and we came here with fairly low expectations, but it's just engaging, talking, and recognizing because like you, I've been everywhere in the country. I've been to 1,000 surgery centers across the country. Mm-hmm. So I can make a connection with every physician that I talk to because I've been there. And a little bit deeper. So, you know, hey, so where else do you practice? How are things going? And you're going to catch individuals that are early in their career. They're just finishing their residency and they're ready to go. And then you're talking to docs that are, you know, anywhere from 40, 55, 60 years old. They're in their prime. And then you've got others that are like the guy that was at Fort Devens had been in 10th group. He's like, he goes, I wish I'd met you 10 years ago, because he's retiring next year. He's 72. And
so that conference is actually,
you've got to know your story, but more importantly, John, you got to be listening and thinking. Listening and thinking. It's just not hey, here's my product. Here's what it does. You've got to ask them questions, listen, and your mind's constantly going tied to, all right, you know, what should I talk to them about? Or, and it may not be a lead for me because I'm here representing my company. So it could be a lead for our rep in Florida. And So I'm, you know, I'm taking notes, I'm following up, and I'm providing the information to Adam down in Florida. Hey, talk to Dr. So-and-so. He's got a new surgery center that he's opening up. I'm thinking, if I'm him, who else knows this guy? Who else do I need to connect with that can make an introduction when I'm down in that area? Everything's in here, and it's constant thinking.
So this conference is actually a good microcosm of what actually happens in the sales world, but in one location. So if you're talking 5,000 surgeons, and then you're talking
5,000, there's 5,000 companies, and I think there's like 7,500 surgeons here.
Or 7,500 surgeons, and then anywhere from. So if you look at that 5,000 companies, and you said that each company has a minimum of five people, so there's 32,500 people at that conference, right?
That
is a ton of noise. And if you look at sales and you take that conference as a picture of sales in the world, it's very noisy, very busy. So whether we're talking about the conference or we're talking about LinkedIn or we're talking about applying for a sales position, how do you stand out amongst all that noise and all that busyness?
In my business, and this goes back to, again, the connections and the relationships. So I'm at the conference, but I've also got other calls going on. I've got a call with the new center in Alaska. But that came because I'd worked with this guy 8 years ago and he reached out to me and said, hey, Chuck, I'm working on a new project. What's going on? What are you guys doing? You guys did a great job for us at the other place 8 years ago. So then for me, it's gathering intel. All right. Because one of the things that we all want to win, we all want to win every deal, but there's customers that we don't want. And you may not know that yet, but it seems like it's good, and all it is problems. All right. And you learn that the hard way, unfortunately. But so it's for me, it's kind of like, hey, that's my target. All right. I've got to do my battlefield reconnaissance. I've got to get my G2 so I know what's going on, who the players are, who am I competing with, who else are they looking at? So then I can build the case around something that's going to fit their needs and eliminate the competition. And so, you know, this conference is all about short interactions, information gathering. Who do I talk to? What's going on? Have you contemplated this? And it's follow-up because, you know, at the conference, you've got 5-minute interactions at max. Sometimes it's like, hey, all right, have a nice day. Or, you know, they don't make eye contact because then they'll be sold to. And I get that. It's kind of like the kiosk at the airport. Like, hey, don't make eye contact with the lady handing out the free cream. So you've got a lot of that, but it's, you know, hey, what do you, are you getting the the right information. And so I've got a young rep who's with me at this conference, and what comes easy wasn't easy 30 years ago. It was awkward. It's when to ask for the business. So we're all familiar with always be closing. Well, you know, can you issue a PO? When I started out, that was my hardest thing. And again, going to my customers, I developed the relationship. I developed the trust, and I'd earn the right. I demoed the equipment. Hey, are you ready to go? Yeah, we are, Chuck. All right. I need to order five of those. I still remember back to that 1993, my first big order. But my boss said, hey, you've earned the right. You've done everything. Now ask for the business. It's one of those learned attributes tied to, hey, on my call with the guys in Alaska yesterday, I didn't ask for the business because I hadn't earned it. And I have another call with them on Friday. I'll win that. I'll win that deal. But I'm also wondering operationally, is that a deal that I want to win? not because of the size and scope, because it's small. Right. And am I going to burden my operations team with a center that may be struggling? So a lot of aspects to think about.
Yeah. So these men and women that are transitioning, they're 3 to 6 months. The ones that are going to be listening, they're 3 to 6 months from getting out. What are some things that you would tell them after 31 years in sales that they need to be looking at right now as they transition?
Be observant. Okay. And just watch other people in sales type situations. And this can be, you know, if they go to a department store, if they go to a restaurant, the interaction, because that server is a salesperson. All right. Yep. If you're at a restaurant, you've got a waiter or waitress, that person's selling. Observe their skills, take into account what they did well. These are just mental notes and go, wow, that was awesome. And when you encounter people that provide a great service, thank them. But going back to those guys that are getting out in 3 to 6 months, pursuing a sales career, I understand that everyone wants to live in a certain place, or maybe, hey, I'm going to go back home. I didn't go home. My first job was in Kansas City. I'd never been there. But that's where the job was. And so you've got to be flexible and wanting to go to different places. And as you move up within an organization, kind of being PCS, it's the same thing. And I get that I've lived in Colorado for 25 years. That's good. But my first four roles were all promotions and all required moves. So being that individual that's willing to, you know, travel or move for the position makes you a better candidate. And in today's job market, and our company too, everything's done online. But you use the resources tied to the field that you go into. Who do you know? Who are the connections? Who can you reach out to? Can you tell me about that job? Because guess what? If you're applying for a job for a company, you can find individuals that are with that company on LinkedIn and you can reach out to them and go, hey, I'm applying for a job at your company. Can I get 10 minutes on the phone with you?
Yes, we teach them that. So yeah. Important.
It's vital, you know, and then you can find out if, hey man, is the culture good? Or is it boiler room where, hey, all we do is send out 400 emails every day. You get burnt out and the turnover is super high. Yeah. That's miserable.
Super miserable. That's not for me. Yeah.
Not for me.
Man, thanks so much for your time and your insight into the world of sales. If somebody's listening to this and they want to get a hold of you, they're interested in potentially a career in medical sales or working directly with you, what would be the best way for them to reach out and get in touch with you?
I'd reach out to me on LinkedIn, and I've done the mentoring stuff for people that were introduced to me, like, hey, Chuck, this individual, and we're all coaches. I enjoy doing it. I can't guarantee that I can get him a job at our company. Our company is pretty small. We have a sales team of 8, but tied to medical and the different directions that you can go. I will say success, you have to have been successful. It's hard to break in as your first sales gig. If you break in, it's typically at a lower level company, but then it's all about the results that you produce that are going to get you that next promotion at the existing company or another company to recruit you.
Yeah. Great. All right.
I look forward, John, to helping out some of these folks as they transition. The love I provide sometimes is tough. but it's only because I learned it the hard way.
Right, right. That's awesome, man. The love I provide is tough. I'm stealing that. I'll give you credit twice, and then it's mine.
Thanks.
Thanks so much, man.
Follow us on Instagram, LinkedIn, and YouTube at Sales Platoon for more updates and veteran success stories. Join us next time as we continue to decode the art of selling through the unique perspectives of those who've served.